Hi, I'm Duncan Fletcher from Game Change Athlete Development Consultancy. I'm here to talk to Josh Gordon today. Josh, how you doing?
I'm doing great. I'm really looking forward to our conversation.
Absolutely, so am I. I guess today we're going to have the opportunity to kind of delve into issues around brand damage and examining issues that that can pop up if you're an athletic director or a coach when you're in that kind of a situation where an issue pops up. What's the best possible way to go about dealing with it? So I'm looking forward to hearing what you have to say about it today.
So Duncan, I put together a little slideshow, and please feel free as we're talking to put your own points in or ask questions as we go. It's meant to be a brief touching point on some of the issues that arise in high visibility incidents. So you'll see my eyes shift as I'm going towards the PowerPoint here.
Perfect.
And away we roll.
Great.
So as you touched on, the conversation, the topic here is brand damage. We're really looking at what is the impact when we see high visibility incidents. Let's start by why we should care. And really as a backdrop, what are the power of sports brands? Why is there all this money in this industry? And really what you start to see, and these should all be fairly recognizable logos that we have up here, all the leagues and entities, this applies the same for intercollegiate with different universities. And what you're seeing is it's such a recognizable brand. It's spontaneous in a way that few other entertainment industries are. It captures the imagination. Folks can relate to it. They've played these sports. They follow them closely. And many of the other brands, whether you're a McDonald's or Coca-Cola or anyone else, attach themselves to these brands, really trying to extol all the virtues that they go. So huge industry, as we know, and the stakes are quite high because all of this is operating in the public realm between Twitter and everything else. There's a lot going on. All directly. Again, the power of association. These are some of the top investors in the sports industry. All these names are the ones that are putting many, 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 many millions of dollars into this industry through advertisement, sponsorship, signage, athlete endorsement, you name it. These are the folks. And what you can imagine, some of these folks are not the healthiest products in the world, whether you're talking about beer or soda or any of these things, McDonald's, but by attaching to athletics, they get some of that. You know, it's a positive association that makes really good sense here. So there's an old adage that we talk about, any publicity is good publicity. And I do think some of our friends in the sports industry still hold on to that. And yet we have to at least question it. Is there really no such thing as bad publicity? And these are a few of the things in recent headlines, whether you're talking about North Carolina and some of the issues around academic integrity or Lance Armstrong and the integrity of the actual, you know, competition itself. We saw in the NFL, well, the NFL, you and I know, Duncan, the NFL has been a topic that's been making headlines for all the wrong reasons in the last couple of years. And we could go back to the bounty gate of the Saints. We could talk about Ray Rice and certainly FIFA and the international level and the corruption around there. These are just little touch points. So certainly a lot of eyeballs on here, but I would think most would agree that this isn't exactly the way you want to be capturing the imagination of the world.
I could agree with you more, Josh. I think that when you say there's no such thing as bad publicity, these examples are perfect in terms of the really negative impact that that can really be brought down on an organization. And like you said, the NFL, unfortunately, has really been hit hard by it.
Yeah, and so you'll see some folks come to the defense of athletes here, and somewhat rightfully so, in terms of the stigma that athletes behave badly more often. And you spent a lot of time on the athlete engagement side and athlete development side, Duncan, and I think this is obvious to you, but I don't think it's as obvious to all folks out there that while there certainly are things happening out there, there's quite a bit. The real issue, and there's been quite a bit of research around this, isn't that athletes are behaving, you know, badly at a higher rate than any of the rest of the world. In fact, it's really the opposite. They're not behaving worse more often. It's, in fact, that there's no tolerance for any bad behavior, right? This quote from David Cornwell at the bottom, I think, does a nice illustration where he says, "Twitter abhors context and media outlets' desire to be first has overwhelmed the journalist's obligation to be right." So even in situations where there's subtlety or, you know, it's not of the extreme like a Ray Rice or some of these others, there's still incredible damage from anything that says there was a charge or anything there. I'd love to get your thoughts a bit here, because I know you spent quite a bit of time thinking about, you know, actual behavior, and then the PR and brand side are sort of a different layer on top of it.
Well, absolutely. I think you're spot on. I think one of the greatest frustrations that I've had working in this space is this idea that all athletes are painted with the same brush in terms of, you know, if there is an issue that comes up, whether it be domestic violence or drinking and driving or whatever the case may be, yeah, there is this perception that all athletes are prone to these kinds of poor decision-making. And I think at the end of the day, as the research has demonstrated, that is in fact not the case. Most athletes are well-behaved, and they actually, you know, they have issues at a far lower rate than the general population. But I think the challenge is that as you're kind of getting to, or the point you're driving to, is that even a hiccup at a very low rate has a massive impact, not only for the individual athlete, but the organization or the entity they work for. And I think that is one of the most frustrating things, in that it's really difficult to reach athletes and have them understand that, yeah, you may hiccup at a really small level, but how that gets magnified is often beyond the issue itself, or blown out beyond the issue itself. So couldn't agree more with your take on it.
Yeah, Duncan, in one of our other talks you had mentioned that, you know, essentially you could be great 23 hours and 56 minutes of the day, but if there's a 4-minute period where something goes awry, that could destroy all that goodwill and good work.
Unequivocally, you could really find yourself in a bad spot, even if you are, a solid citizen, 365 days a year. You have one bad hour, one bad, 5-minute period. It can really come back and haunt you, unequivocally.
So I'm going to pick on the NFL for a moment here, and I'm not pulling any secrets out of the bag on this one. I think, you look at some of these photos here, these are all folks, whether it's Jonathan Martin and the Richie Incognito bullying issue, or Ray Rice and the domestic violence. We had, the wide receiver who made racist remarks. We've had the bounty culture. We've had Ben Roethlisberger, Goodell himself in terms of the fairness of the process, Tom Brady, Michael Vick. All these folks, are putting the NFL out there at times in a really bad light. And fair or unfair, it becomes a dominant story of the day, and it tends to persist for a long time. What's so interesting is, we'll stay with the Ray Rice one for a moment, that in the immediate aftermath of Ray Rice and the domestic violence and how visceral that response was for all of us, what would you have expected, Duncan, in terms of viewership, in particular viewership among women? What would you expect the impact would be over the months ahead after that?
Well, yeah, your initial reaction is that the viewership should go down. There should be a significantly negative impact on the league. And if I'm not mistaken, we didn't actually see that happen.
No, we didn't. And I think what we're seeing is really strange bifurcation with this league that makes it an exception for the moment. And so what you're seeing is folks are able to say, look, this is all bad behavior. It's horrible. But Sunday, and now Saturday, and Friday, and Thursday, the football games are still part of my family's culture, and so I'm going to separate the two. I want the experience of the event, but I hate what's going on there. But that's becoming harder and harder, and over time, people are having to reconcile that dissonance. And certainly the league would be wise to think, could it sustain this type of PR for very long? And my sense is probably not. But the immediate aftermath was, hey, it's been a horrible week. We've been talking nothing about domestic violence. And what do I need? I need an outlet, which is what sports are. I need an outlet from all this horrible stuff. And it just so happens to be the outlet for talking about Ray Rice and domestic violence is, in fact, football for people, right?
Right. And I think what's really interesting as well is that when you're talking about the response to it, I think what was interesting is that those brands that you were talking about, those were the entities that really put some serious heat on the NFL to be far more proactive in how it decided to address it. Because I remember there were at least 3 or 4 major sponsors that were talking about walking away, and those were worth hundreds and hundreds of millions of dollars to the NFL. So I thought that was really interesting in terms of where a lot of that pressure came from.
Yeah, so I bring this up just to highlight the complexity. It's not a purely linear relationship that every bad thing that happens immediately harms you, but in aggregate, there should be extreme reason for concern here. So when we talk about how do people respond in the immediate aftermath, so with crisis and just the definitions are on the same page, we're talking about a major occurrence with a potentially negative outcome affecting the organization or industry as well as its public or good name. So each one of these that we've been talking about, those are absolutely moments of crisis. You know that's not business as usual for any of the leagues or teams when they have that phone call in the middle of the night that something has happened. And yet, you know, what we see is a cycle of response is this really quick, rapid cycle where we, you know, may not have all the information we need to process it, but we're still going to pass judgment really quickly and we're going to go from there. When you look at some of the costs of this, right, and, you know, think about this from any perspective that you're coming to our talk here. If you're an administrator, a coach, an athlete, or a supporter, look at some of the costs around this. And really, to me, it's three major economies. We're talking about brand damage. We're talking about burning actual dollars, right? So that cash register is emptying out on you. And you're talking about, you know, loss of wins and championships and those kind of things and all the rollout. So there is significant cost. We did bring up the NFL as an exception for some of it, but when you dial down, you still see these costs going on and lasting. Viewership tends to drag a little bit behind in terms of response. I think that's some of what we're seeing there. So there was a very interesting survey done through Turnkey Intelligence in April of this year, and it talked about what are some of the threats of the sports industry. So what is threatening the viability of sports itself? And I think, Duncan, what you'd see here, and it should jump right out at you, look at athlete conduct.
Absolutely.
All right, so here we're talking about, you know, an area that both you and I spend a great deal of time, but athlete conduct, whether you're a fan or an industry executive, this is seen as one of the greatest threats to the industry itself.
Well, when you really boil it down, the biggest product or the key product are the athletes. So if their product is somehow seen to be not up to snuff, people are going to balk at it unequivocally.
And it goes back to the idea of why do we watch sports? It's a diversion from all the many difficult things we all have in our daily life. We're looking for something to take us away from that. And if all it is a mirror of the very problems in the world itself, that kind of defeats the purpose. So we move on to this concept of trust. Right? And what we're talking about is these brands essentially operate on reputation and on this concept that you can trust them, that there's someone that you can put your faith in. And what's a nice quote that I've often used, and I think you've seen me use this before, is that trust is a peculiar resource. It is built rather than depleted with use. So you can't act too trustworthy too often and have that be a problem. Now, same current turnkey study, you know, how often would you trust these leagues, teams, and events if you were to consider them as a person? Always is only 14%. Now, I don't know about you, Duncan, but if that were the bar chart or the pie chart for my marriage, I'd be in trouble.
You would definitely be in trouble. You would definitely need to do some work on it unequivocally. I don't know why I keep saying unequivocally. I'm going to stop saying that and say, yes, that's absolutely correct.
It's unequivocally time to shelve that word.
There you go. I think we got to go with one of these.
Yes, finally. So, Duncan, if you were looking at your own organization, Game Change, would you be happy with this if it said, hey, sometimes people think that Game Change operates in a trustworthy manner 74% of the time? Is that a good place for you to operate?
Absolutely not. I think, and you know this as well as I do, that in this sport industry, if you want to work with athletes, if you want to work with these sports organizations, one of the key factors in being able to do that is whether or not you are deemed to be trustworthy. And building up that trust takes years. So I think it's really interesting when you kind of reverse it that in order to work with these organizations, you really have to be able to demonstrate trust. But sometimes they have a hard time projecting that outward to their fans and maybe even their sponsors. So I think, yeah, I mean, if this is my company, I've got some serious concerns.
Agreed. And so, you know, when you look at trust, again, we talk about attributions. I'll just touch on this quickly. This is from Gary Furlong, a gentleman who I'm working on a book with right now. And what Gary talks about quite a bit here is that if we attribute things to situation, that's a very different level than if we start thinking about it as having intentionality or something more intrinsic, whether it's good or bad. So we love to say, hey, that person was in a bad spot. That's why that happened, or they were put in an unfair position. On the other hand, if we think it's in someone's character, that's a much more lasting source of distrust. If you think of types of trust, most of us think about trust from this perspective, personal. So I go to look you in the eyes, Duncan, and I say, hey, there's a guy I can trust. The reality is that's not really a great place to spend a lot of time. We need to think about trust more from a systemic standpoint would be what I would advocate, because if you can trust the process. So going back to the NFL, most people do not trust, from the public's perspective, Roger Goodell. And if they are to restore trust in the NFL, it's going to have to be by trusting that the system and the processes are fair and transparent. So, Duncan, we've talked about this one as well a few times in your and I conversations, and this idea that we treat a lot of the conduct issues as a bad apple. So we focus on the individual. We say that athlete is a bad apple. Let's get rid of them. Let's punish the individual. There's a problem with this in that when we look at it, we have to eventually question, why are there so many bad apples? And what I would encourage is that we look much more holistically at why there are so many bad apples, because in fact, at a certain point, you may just be a bad apple factory. You're producing somewhere in that athlete development cycle or in that culture of your organization, you are producing bad apples on a regular basis, in which case, and we know there's no tolerance, even though it may be less than the rest of the world, there's no tolerance for any bad apples. So what can we do systemically to change that order? Does that make sense from your perspective too?
Absolutely. I think the importance of ensuring that your culture is geared towards putting athletes in the best possible position to succeed is critical. And like you said, that's a function of the system, of the environment that they are in. And if you don't have the correct environment for those athletes, like you said, you are going to be a bad apple factory. So I think that's a great analogy to really kind of get it across that it isn't just necessarily the individual athlete themselves. It really could be a function also of what's going on around them and the environment that they're being asked to either compete, study, or interact in.
And just a few final thoughts, and I won't go through each of these, but the basic concept, I think what you and I tend to think is incredibly important in this space, is looking towards systemic solutions. Things that are repeatable, that shift the culture, shift the paradigm of athlete development in a way that goes from always looking for one bad player, that means let's stop spending all of our money and energy on investigation, let's move towards assessment where we're looking towards a path forward, let's get into the proactive side of things instead of reactive, and let's really think about what are some of those structural and organizational reasons for why we see this happening. And we know that certain organizations deal with these things a lot better than others do. So quick conclusion for a quote, and then you and I can kind of put some finishing touches here. And I'm going to read this one because I think it brings home the point. This is an issue that has been or will have to be faced at some time by every league, team, players, association, university, and sports organization. Athletes, coaches, officials, front office personnel, and team owners are going to do things from time to time. They'll put them in a bad light. And today, the media and fans, when they learn of such conduct, will express a view that the offending individual should be punished and may try to pressure the employer to impose punishment. That's the nature of our culture. And the point being here that there's tremendous pressure to stay in that mode of investigating, to stay in the mode of punishing the individual, and then move on with business as usual. And what I would advocate, I believe you would as well, Duncan, is that we need to move to much more systemic solutions and looking towards coming up with a more holistic approach to how we handle athletes.
I think you're absolutely right. I think that was well delivered. So let me give you quickly one more. But I think you hit the nail on the head. I think the key is you really have to go through the process of driving change by addressing the culture. I think you've touched on that several times, and you identified some of those threats. And maybe I could get you to talk a little bit more as we wrap this up, how important it is to address those threats so that they don't become long-term issues that your organization needs to deal with. So maybe just touch a bit more on how important it is to address those systemic pieces.
Yeah, so I think it's so tempting to move on from a crisis moment after you've gotten rid of an individual or punished an individual. There's a sense of justice behind that. It's very tempting. It's completely understandable, but it doesn't have the impact around behavior. And what you're really looking towards is, what are some of those behavioral triggers? How do we create safe places for individuals to go when there is an issue? How do we build the community more broadly around athletes so that the infrastructure is healthy and supportive? And in order to do that, there is no cookie cutter solution. What you really need to think about doing is looking for your organization, what are your own organizational cultural triggers, and then shape something that, that deals with the systemic flaws in your organization. And there's a lot of great tools out there to do that. We can look towards other industries, and we can look towards a lot of the innovation that we've been wrestling with to really help and have an impact there.
Perfect. Well, I think that was a phenomenal overview of, you know, sort of how to deal with these brand issues and these high visibility issues. So first off, Josh, thanks very much for coming here and talking to us today. It was fantastic.
My pleasure.
And I guess